Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
A slightly belated Happy New Year. So two things, because we've had one of our listeners wanted to know how Christmas was for you, because they're also very excited that you're now very excited about Christmas. And secondly, have you made any New Year's resolutions?
Happy New Year. And Happy New Year, everyone. I had a fantastic Christmas. I hope. Oh, how was yours?
That. Yeah, no, really. I was a little bit sick. I think the body finally gave up when I finally stopped working. But still, you know, lots of cold drugs and off we went. So no, it's lovely, really lovely.
Oh yeah, no, I loved it. I love my Christmas tree. It's gone already. It looks so bare. I think I keep saying to
it's Ben, gone already.
I mean, the room is so dark and yeah, it's just boring now. So I don't know. We've got to do something with that corner.
When did your tree go?
Yesterday. Yeah.
Oh God, you were quick out the door.
Yeah, well,
you?
it's out. I can see it right now. It's actually outside my window, but it's ready to go. I mean, it's not being picked up for another week, but it is. Yeah, it's ready to go. Well, you know, we just thought it'd be a nice activity with the little ones, just sort of wind down from the Christmas season. No, you can't have chocolate five times a day anymore. It's not Christmas. You know what I mean? It's an end. That was Christmas. Yeah. It's done. We're moving on.
Yeah, it's. I was kind of the thinking I want to get it all done and sorted before I go to Australia. So that was our tree is currently outside. We're recording this. What's the third? Is outside the house and it's being picked up today. But for me, it was kind of.
You were quick as well then.
Yeah, it was quite quick, wasn't it? I was thinking that. But I was kind of thinking
you were going to say you need to leave it for another week.
Keeping it till February. No, in my mind, I was kind of the fellas go back to school tomorrow. And before I go to Australia, I just wanted to get it all done, tidied away and sort of sorted out. And I'm just wondering, with all the joy and the lights and Christmas, have you not paid your recent electricity bill? Because it looks like you are sitting in the dark. Where
it
are your lights?
It is quite dark because I was just sort of relying on daylight, but it's quite a grey day.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of daylight. Can you see me at all?
No. No. Well, that's a little bit better, but it was sort of, I don't know, sort of darkness.
Yeah,
sort of...
also the light's behind me, so I'm just a silhouette. So
it's a moody lighting. So lovely. Yeah, do you ever make New Year's resolutions or not?
Not really. I mean, the general sort of, right, we've indulged quite a lot in December. Yeah. Let's get a grip of it. Yeah. But it's not really a resolution. It's sort of just going back to normal. It's not, I don't know. No, is the answer. No, I have no New Year's resolutions. No. Do you do them?
No, same as you. It's just stop eating, I don't know, eight, nine meals a day and drinking at, I don't know, midday, like mulled wine because it doesn't feel like drinking and, you know, that.
But that's it, isn't it? You cut out the excess alcohol, you cut out the excess chocolate and the nibbling on leftovers wherever you go and all that sort of thing. And then it's fine. Yeah. Everything goes back to normal.
We got one more friend's birthday this evening, and then after that it's done.
So that's, but I've still been doing the marker.
That's the marker. I've still been doing my runs. I've still been sort of getting out there and sort of keeping that going. But yeah, that is definitely the marker. All roads now lead to Australia. Tennis season up and running. And actually, I did a show on Five Live last night, and there are so many storylines.
Yes.
We are a matter of days into the new season. And we did a whole hour, right? A whole hour. We didn't mention Alcaraz. His name didn't come up once. Djokovic, I think, was mentioned for about 10 seconds in passing because there are so many storylines. We were focusing on Naomi Osaka's return.
Yes.
Rafa Nadal is back. The Brits, Andy Murray, Emma Raducanu. And all those players who are returning, there is so much going on.
It's the year of comebacks, isn't it? And big name comebacks, not only Osaka, but Nadal, as you were saying, and back to winning ways. And Raducanu, she's a big name now. It's sort of weird to say that, isn't it? But she is. There's as much interest with her. Maybe not as Nadal. Fair enough. But, you know, she's one of those big players. Everybody's excited to see her return. And yeah, just a lot to really, I think, get excited about. Wouldn't it be fantastic if Osaka could bring her best level again. Of course, it would be fantastic if Nadal could bring his best level again. Feels a bit more unlikely just with the way he's talking. But then we talk about this all the time. He's always very negative,
isn't he?
Oh,
he always talks like that. Every year he'd go into Roland Garros going, well, I'm not sure. And you're thinking, what do you mean you're not sure? And then there's title number 14. So I don't think he would have gone halfway around the world, halfway across the world, if he didn't think he could compete.
No.
And against Dominic Thiem, I mean, look, it's only one match.
No.
But he looked good. And I know he said, look, everything feels good and I feel healthy and everything has to stay good and healthy. But he's looking really good.
Yeah. And he's just not the type to go, you know what? I'll go. I'll get a couple of matches and we'll move on from there. No, it's not what he does.
No.
And if he's ever implied that, he's normally ended up winning the tournament. That's remember when he won 21, his 21st slam at Australia, and everybody was saying it's Djokovic is going to get the 21. And then obviously he didn't play. But you know, nobody was
injured,
thinking Nadal was going to do
back.
That.
Yeah, not
he was
at all.
Injured, it was terrible, and then it was the same. You know, when the French was in the autumnal, the wintry autumnal season, and it was well, he could possibly win in these conditions, and then he does, and and then he won on one foot last year. It seems like the more obstacles there are for him, the more likely he is to win. But he is also that character. He puts it out. He takes the pressure off. That's what he's done. Iga Świątek has learned from her hero. She now does exactly the same thing before she wins a slam, and she does that. Osaka, actually, in her own way, did a very similar thing. Remember, she used to put out these long sort of notes that she had written apologising to her fans for her level. And she did it definitely before two slam victories. She was coming in and she was like, look, my level's just not been there. I'm really sorry. And it was right before the Grand Slam. One was definitely US, one was definitely yours. I don't know if she did it for all four, probably not. But anyway, and then she goes and wins it. It's just releasing that pressure valve. She's saying, hey, guys, just, you know, look, I want to do well and everything. And you just don't think I'm at my best. You know, don't think I'm definitely going to win. And then it just releases that pressure. And Rafa does the same thing, saying, hey, I'm on one foot. I can't feel it. I can't walk. I'm hobbling on crutches most of the time. And then he goes and wins a slam. So, and Świątek as well. They're the main three culprits of that. So don't get sucked into it.
Well, have I been sucked in? Well, no, my predictions are notoriously bad. But recently we were asked by Sky Sports, because tennis is back on Sky Sports, which is super exciting. We were asked to give our top eight finishes. So the eight and the ATP and WTA that will make the respective finals at the end of the year. And you and I think we were fairly sensible, but we threw a couple of rogue ones in. And my rogue one was Osaka. I've got her finishing eight because, and in her words, she said, look, I'm going to play. She used to play such a limited schedule. But now she said, I want to play more. I want to be taking my daughter to these tournaments. I want to get out there. I want to have a really good build up to the US Open. So I've got her finishing in eighth place and making it to the WTA finals.
Yeah, I think it's a massive call, but I think it's a big call. And wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be so good if she was able to do that? You know, my question is sort of injury. She's never really been that injury prone, but it is tough after a layoff. And I know that it's her first time playing in a long period of time, of course. But remember before she went on maternity leave, she had been struggling for a long time, whether it was the media pressures or a bit of injury, as in it was, I don't know exactly how long it was, but which Roland Garros was it where she said she didn't want to do the press? When was that? 2021.
And do you remember that caused?
Was that 2021?
In the press room,
yes. So it's 2021, and since then she really has barely played. Like, that is a long time. She hasn't had a full season since, because she then, you know, it was so overwhelming. She took some time for herself to get herself better, and then she came back a little bit, and then I think she had an injury. She went away a little bit. And then she came back, and then she got pregnant. And then anyway, so, you know, you add it all up over the past 3.5 years, she really we haven't seen an awful lot of her. So it's, yes, you could say, oh, her last match was on X date, and it's the first time seeing her since then. But this is a long period of time. She has not played a full season. So I think it's going to be, physically is going to be
I think it is. And I've got to say, though, if you think that's a big call, when we get to the person you've put in your top eight, I think that's an even bigger call. But with just staying with the circle for a second, a friend of ours, colleague of ours, Ben Rothenberg, has written a book, Naomi Osaka, Her Journey to Finding Her Power and Her Voice. And very kindly, his publisher sent me over a copy to look through because we did a show and he was on it. And I find it really interesting. And I think people are going to find it interesting because she is quite a polarizing character. And I think you touched on Roland Garros and how things happen there. And I think what's the great thing about this book is it really digs deep into when she was young and growing up and putting the sort of meat on the bones of Naomi Osaka. Because as much as we know about her, I feel we don't know about her as well. And she kind of went stratospheric and then she sort of disappeared. And would she come back? And so I think the book is out. It's sort of coming out now, depending where you are in the world. If you can get your hands on a copy, do so, because she is such an interesting character. But that sound that the ball makes off her racket, I mean, it's a very special sound, isn't it, when she cracks the ball?
Oh, when she crushes it down the line on that forehand side particularly. I love it so much. She goes into the corner and you know it's coming and you just wait for it, and it is an almighty sound. And also, because she doesn't make a lot of noise when she hits the ball, I don't think she makes any noise most of the time. So you just purely hear the ball strike, which is so fun because it is so ridiculously crisp. I mean, she's phenomenal. She is phenomenal. And if she can have full seasons and be fit and healthy, I don't know whether she'll get to the top eight this year, but that is where she belongs. There's nowhere else she can possibly be.
Look, we won her up then. She hasn't actually played that many times against Iga Świątek. I want to see that. I want to see them both at their top level, cracking the ball. And then you get the Osaka who comes into press conference and she's so quiet. But the things that seem different about since she's had her daughter Shai is she's a lot more confident. And she said, and you must feel this, I felt this, I'm sure every mother out there has felt this, that when you're pregnant and you have the little one or the little ones, some things don't matter anymore. You have a totally new outlook on life. You don't sweat the small stuff. You know those things before you'd get really worried about? You'd think, I don't actually mind because I've got this sort of little bundles of joy I go back to, and they give me this unconditional love. And everything she was saying, I think a lot of people will be able to relate to. You have a different outlook on life. And she seems to have brought that back into tennis. And if it means we've got a fit and healthy, happy Naomi Osaka on the tour, I mean, I think that's fabulous.
Yeah, I really think it's such a big factor. And it's not that you can't have the right perspective without having kids. But for me, I think one of the biggest things that I saw on tour, and when I was playing, it was mainly for the men because there were so few women playing who had kids at the time. It's now becoming more and more common, which is great. But there were loads of dads on tour, right? And, you know, the creche was filled at the slams and that sort of thing. You know, you lose a heartbreaker and you walk off the court and you can just, you know, have a kid running up to you that thinks you're their biggest hero. They probably haven't watched the match. They don't care what's happened. They're 3 years old.
They've been on their iPads. They've been watching.
You've still got
whatever.
Your bag on your back and they're saying, Dad, I've done this with my Lego. And, you know, and one of the hardest things to manage in tennis, and I think actually going all the way back to last year with the Breakpoint series that came out on Netflix, it showed how difficult it is for players to deal with the fact that they lose every single week that they play. And even if you win a couple of tournaments each year, that's incredibly successful. That's only twice in a year you don't lose. And the amount of losing you have to do is hard to take. And to have your family with you, or even if they're at home and you can just get on a call with them to distract you, to fill you up with some joy again, I think it's so much healthier in terms of just mentally, because it is just a tennis match. Yeah, in the moment, you've got to treat it like it's not the end, that it's the end of the world. If you're going to lose, that's how you've got to be competitive, but you've got to be able to switch it on and off. And some people train themselves and they're really good at doing it. I think Federer always said that, you know, his shower was the marker. At the end of the shower, it was done and he stopped moping. I'm sure there have been some losses along the way. I'm thinking back to a certain Wimbledon final that might have taken a little longer.
Ooh, a few more showers.
Yeah, cold just stayed showers, in the shower for 8 hours. 3 days later, Mirka's like, hello, we have to leave the grounds, they're kicking us out. So I think he said that. But, you know, there's that element of it as well. So I think it really changes the vibe and the feel when you're there, and can pick you up in those tough spots.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
On this, this is a bit of, I've gone sort of left field from where we were going to head, but on losses, heartbreak, dealing with it, children, have you seen that clip from the new documentary about Ange Jabeur? She had a film crew following her through the course of the year, and recently they released some clips from it. She was heavily involved in it in terms of she was working with the camera crew, they were following her. She spoke about the Wimbledon defeat and why it was so crushing. And we could see how much she wanted it. She almost wanted it too much that was detrimental to her when she was on the court. But she said afterwards, I didn't just see the Wimbledon title evaporate, but I saw becoming a mother evaporate at that time. She said, I really thought I could win it and then step away and try for a baby. And in that second, the title had gone. And at that moment, the chance to become a mum had gone. And it was absolutely heartbreaking. Look, she's young enough. She has plenty more years. Of course, she can still become a mum. But I just found that so heartbreaking. The pressure, and we could see the pressure on her, but the pressure you can put on yourself. It wasn't just about the title, becoming a Grand Slam champion. There have changed so many lives because of who and what she represents. But it was that line of, at that moment, my dreams of becoming a mother disappeared.
Yeah, it's such a big thing. And I know that we've talked about that there are plenty of mums back on tour and it is becoming more normal. And also, they're absolutely killing it, right?
Yeah,
like, 100%. They're doing unbelievably well with it. I mean, look, Serena was phenomenal, Azarenka before that. Kim Clijsters, of course, before that. But now there's sort of a group of them. It's becoming far more normal. We sort of expect that there's a chance that people are going to come back from maternity leave. We've got Kerber back this year. Kvitova's just announced that she's pregnant. Maybe she'll come back afterwards. Who knows? Maybe not. I mean, she's into her 30s now, so you know it might not be on the cards for her. But this is such a big thing that all female players, not all of them, a lot of female players felt. As I say, you know, I felt it when I was playing, in that your career, and it's not just tennis players, this is you know, any sort of successful career when you're young, it's a sort of juxtaposing what you want from your personal life and what you know when can you do it. You're on tour, you want to keep in your physical prime, and it becomes really difficult. And I guess, look, obviously she wanted to do an Ash Barty, get that goal, which is right in front of her, so of course she you know, she wants to try and push for that, but I guess she's going to keep on pushing. I wonder with Ash if, I mean, because we've seen Ash Barty back, she was in Brisbane, wasn't she, with her little one. But I wonder with Ash, if she hadn't won a slam, whether she would have stopped when she did, because I think that was probably a similar thing for her. It was like, great, I've achieved everything I want to achieve. Now I can go and have a baby. So that's like the ideal, I suppose, and that's possibly the ideal that Ons had in her mind, but because it hasn't quite worked out like that, she feels she can't. I wonder whether Ash would have felt the same way. It's a very interesting psychology, and yeah, you could really feel it, couldn't you? Emotional.
There were 10 mothers in the main draw at last year's US Open, talking about mothers crushing it on tour. And as you mentioned, Petra Kvitova and Belinda Bencic won't be defending her Olympic title because she's going to give birth to her first child. So it was, but yeah, look, Ange Jabeur, there'll be plenty more opportunities. It's going to be so interesting to see how Naomi Osaka's done. We know that Caroline Wozniacki, she'll be in action again. She has a wild card in Australia. But just let everyone know your wild card, if we can call it that, for the top eight finish at the end of the year.
Danielle Collins. I know that's not the one you meant. But no, I've put Danielle Collins in my top eight. I think that is more heart than head. I want it so much for her. I know she's been through an awful lot. And, you know, look, it's not that much of a wild card. Look, my two wild cards on the WTA side, Danielle Collins and, spoiler, Emma Raducanu. I mean, it's been published. But, I mean, I've got a Grand Slam champ and a Grand Slam finalist. It's not that rogue. I'm not picking some...
Well, hang on. I've got a former world number one and a four-time Grand Slam champion. You're still going, oh, well, that's going to be a tough call this year. And yet you're saying, well, hang on a second. I've got a Grand Slam finalist and a Grand Slam champion.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But anyway,
come on,
Collins. feel it for you. Let's go. We need some good draws. We need some things to fall into place. But, you know, she's back and she's brilliant. I love her. But yes, I'm assuming you're meaning Raducanu. I think I put her in at 7, did I?
7 or 8. One of those. It was a bit like me, sort of towards the bottom end. But still, I mean, that is a big call when someone who has gone through 3 surgeries, was in a wheelchair, rehab for 8 months, is now back on court, has played a match. Yes, there's still a long way to go. We know the pressure that comes with it and more changes. And you're saying she's going to crush it, and I hope so, and reach the last 8.
Well, I will add a little bit of context to this in that when we were asked to put these together, she was in the middle of a training block with my brother as her coach. So I was like, look, she's hooked up with the best coach on the planet.
Absolutely.
This is going to happen. And this is going to happen. And, you know, whilst, you know, I maybe don't have evidence that he's the best coach on the planet, like he's incredibly good. And I really believe that he's exactly what she needs. In terms of what he's very good at and what she's very good at. Anyway, we're in the middle of that those couple of weeks. So I was like, this is perfect. She's going to go back to the top 8. Of course she is. So look, I don't know if she's going to make the top 8 or not. You know, no one asked me to bet anything on it or bet my house on anything. So I don't know. But I know that if she does continue to work with my brother, I think that it is a fantastic pairing. And no one's going to believe that I'm saying that in an unbiased way. But genuinely, I am. Because I know what he's really good at. She brings the competitiveness. We saw that in her first round match against Rousseau this week in Auckland. You know, she's obviously got the class and the quality. She just needs the ability in terms of, you know, the technical work. And the thing is that those sorts of things, the way you hit the ball, that all slips over time, right? As in, it just does. When you compete, different surfaces, you know, you're changing string tensions, balls and everything. I mean, over the course of a year, my grip moved completely, became suddenly extreme, and I didn't even realise. So all these things sort of creep in, these habits that just need to get, I suppose, sorted. I mean, she worked with Nick when she was younger for a couple of years, when she was in her early teens. So they know each other very well, but obviously quite a lot has happened to
a little bit
Emma since then. But yeah, anyway, so that's just providing a little bit of context. But I'm really excited, you know, if they get to work together further on.
But that's what I wanted to say. Maybe it would be a good thing because they do know each other, and that works on both sides. And I know we had that discussion with Zhong Xinwen and Wim Fassett when he said, right, bye-bye, I'm back off to Osaka. And I kept saying, well, how can you trust someone and they leave? And it was quite an interesting debate we had. But there will be an element of trust there, and they know each other. And again, that works on both sides. It's not just about Emma Raducanu knowing your brother. It's about your brother knowing and wanting to do more and help Emma Raducanu, because it has to be a two-way thing. And I see that as a positive, that they have history from when she was younger.
Yeah, of course. I mean, she knows that he's going to be in her corner. He always has been. You know, even in between now and when they work together, he's done blocks with her. It's always sort of been her style, and how she likes to do things is sort of work on something for a period of time and then move on. So, I mean, look, who knows what happens? They did a couple of weeks on court together. You know, hopefully it'll be more than that. But yeah, I think it's a really good match. And also, you know, she's looking really good on court, so that's exciting as well. And she's healthy and she's excited, and I think she's adjusted a little bit now to life. But just quickly going back to what you were just saying about Wim Fassett going back to Osaka, and yeah, how you were not happy with him for doing so, Pere Riba just done exactly the same thing in going to Zhang from Coco Gauff. So
not exactly, because if we, oh, this is going to turn into a whole different podcast, because if we think back to Zhong Xinwen, and she came out and said, and maybe she just more honest and put it out there, that she was very upset, she didn't expect it, it's very hurtful, she was very, whereas Coco Gauff said it was due to personal reasons why that didn't work out. We don't know on which side. We don't know if it was the combination with Brad Gilbert, were there too many of them? Did Pere Riba actually call her and say, right, I've had a better or different offer? So we don't know as much of the behind the scenes bits and pieces in that relationship. Whereas Zhong Xinwen,
I thought it was Riba going.
Well, I think it felt,
I might be wrong.
No, I think it felt it was more the way Coco Gauff wrote her statement and spoke about it, it was more Reba, but we don't know the reason. So Wimfer said it was, I'm leaving you to go back to Osaka, goodbye. Whereas I might be wrong, but I don't think that was ever, I remember hearing at the time it was personal reasons why it didn't continue, but I don't know if that was a genuine personal reason, or as I say, whether it was, there was just too many cooks now in that camp, or maybe it was, he said, I've had this other offer, you're okay here, off I go. But I didn't think it was as brutal, strong word, brutal as it seemed with the Jung Fissette situation. But maybe...
Okay. All right, fair enough. Sorry, Pere.
But
sorry,
no, but maybe I'm wrong, and maybe behind the scenes, and Coco Gauff was just different when she came out and said, oh yeah, personal reasons, and he's decided he can't. So maybe it was, but she just sort of tackled it differently. But it's just... Yeah, I mean, and I think that's I think Zheng Shenwen is, she's in my top eight, and she's in yours,
yeah,
too.
I think she's in a lot of people's top eight. Yeah, she's in mine.
I mean, I think she's going to have a great season. She's so talented. I think that it's, look, again, it's so many. So Emma Raducanu, we're going to be keeping an eye on her. She's now into the main draw of Australia. Lauren Davis withdrew. That was the spot that Raducanu needed to go straight in. So all eyes on her. Osaka's back. Angelique Kerber, United Cup. How wonderful. How wonderful to see her back on court. Coco Gauff, how's she going to react now she's a Grand Slam champion? How's Sabalenka going to react to defending a Grand Slam title? I mean, it's just, and that's just really on the WTA side of things. There are so many players to look at. Rybakina, I've tipped her to finish top, haven't I? I've tipped her to finish year-end number one.
Yeah, I think I took her out. I think I took her out. Because,
hang on, you took her out of the top eight?
Yeah,
what?
Because somebody's got to have a dud year.
No, like, come on. You've taken Rybakina out of the top eight. I didn't see that.
It's very difficult to pick, isn't it? But when it comes to the women's side, there's more movement than there is on the men's.
Big call.
You know, who would have picked Vondrousova to be in the top eight?
No, but that was due to the Wimbledon win. Who would have picked her to win Wimbledon? I get that.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean, is in you can get these, people can win slams.
No, I think Rybakina not being in the top eight is a bigger call from you than putting Danielle Collins. I think that's sort of more scandalous than having Danielle Collins or Raducanu.
Well, I had to make room for Collins.
Oh, I can't.
Someone had to go.
Wow. Okay. You can find this on the Sky Sports website. If you search under tennis, you can find our predictions. Because, wow, I didn't even notice you didn't have her in there. That is, I don't know. Are we doing Australian Open predictions today, or are we going to do those next week?
Oh, gosh.
Just so I know if I need...
Well, we have to see the draw first.
Okay,
draw.
So we're gonna sort that out next. Okay, right. So on the men's side, we've touched on the fact that Nadal is there. Djokovic, and again, this isn't kind of a news service pod. We don't sort of do results, but I guess the slight worry, Djokovic, was he, what, 43 matches unbeaten on Australia, beaten by Dimonor, who's finished the season, Dimonor, so well, started it well. But I think the worry, especially for Djokovic fans, would be that the wrist is needed a fair bit of treatment, and he did come out and say he had a little injury on it a couple of days ago.
Yes, it's never ideal at the beginning of the season, is it? You sort of, the narrative is that players will be turning up fit and fresh, but the reality is we have such a short off season that a lot of players turn up not ready. I would never expect that to be Djokovic, because it's, you know, he's obviously, it's a very slick machine, the Djokovic machine, but sometimes people choose. Sometimes people have got to work on stuff in the off season and they can't get it done in 3 weeks. And it's got to take a bit longer, whether it's building up strength somewhere, a certain footwork pattern, changing technique. And actually there isn't enough time to get it done. And they just say it's going to run into next season. And that's just how it goes. This is slightly different because obviously the wrist needed a bit of treatment. So yeah, not ideal. I don't know if he's changed anything, whether he's changed his strings or he's, I don't know if there's anything different, because that's something that really impacts the wrist. The balls impact the wrist and obviously they chop and change all over the place. But, you know, he's been quite extraordinarily good at being fit in his career. What has he had? Two significant stints out. And other than that, he's always found a way.
And once again, we haven't even mentioned Carlos Alcaraz. Why is no one talking about Carlos Alcaraz at the moment? Is that maybe a good thing? I mean, he didn't play Australia last year, so he'll be really up for being here. And I think the conditions, I think everything will quite suit Carlos Alcaraz here. And it's another intriguing storyline with Djokovic still ruling the roost. And Rune, who's putting together his A-list star-studded coaching team. His mother will always be an important part and she'll always be an ever present. But now we've got Boris Becker and we've got Severin Luthi as well.
We have. No one's talking about Carlos Alcaraz because the Spanish press are not talking about Carlos Alcaraz. They seem they're only trained to have one superstar player. And I'm afraid...
You can't do two.
Rafa Nadal is back. Because remember, poor old David Ferrer, he was like number three in the world. But it didn't matter.
He got to a Grand Slam final. Everyone was
when,
like...
Exactly, oh, when Rafa yeah. was... No, oh. no one was turning up to his press conferences. I mean, that's not exactly true. But you get the general idea.
Yeah.
Okay, and look, yeah. there is... There's, you know, Rafa's back. And that is big news. And also, they know Carlos is going to be around for a long time. So maybe that's why they're not talking about him. But yeah, Runa, I mean... It's got to be a big year for Runa, hasn't it? I mean, that's some serious investment. You can't say yeah. he's not taking it seriously with that team because that ain't cheap. Even with the money that they're making at the top, that is a big, big chunk that they're putting into that. Runa wants a slam and he wants one this year. That's what that says to me.
Jannik Sinner, does he get a slam this year?
I think I said at the end of last year that I could see him in some finals, maybe a couple of finals. Mm. I could see it happening. I'm not sure. It's a leap to a win, though. It's a leap to a victory. I don't know.
And Medvedev, again, I feel that we're not really talking about... I don't think necessarily for these players... I mean, look, some want to be talked about. And some are like, why are you not talking about me? And I want to be in the conversation. And Medvedev said that ahead of the US Open, didn't he? He said, well, hang on, how about me? I'm going to get myself into the conversation. And I think, again, in my year eight finish, I've got Medvedev... Have I got him second?
Yeah,
I think I might have. I've got him high up there because I think he is so good and he's in such a good place and I think he's always going to be there or thereabouts. But again, it comes down to the story. I mean, you cannot not be excited, I don't think, about 2024.
No.
Because the young guys on the men's side are finally saying, all right then, we are here to play. We are the real deal. On the women's side, you've got this mix. It feels very open on both. I know in the men's you still have Novak Djokovic just, I think, standing slightly above everybody else. But, the storylines, the young players come through, the players coming back. I mean, it's only January the 3rd and there is already so much going on.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Medvedev, if you think, I mean, 2023 was a world-class, top-quality, but very quiet season from him. He still threw in a Grand Slam final, but because there was so much focus on Djokovic and Alcaraz, he was quietly going about his business. If you think that's a quiet year, I mean, if he lifts it, which we know he can, in 2024, then what's he going to be able to deliver? Who knows? That is exciting, but it's amazing. I think it's definitely setting up to be one of the most exciting years I think we've had in a long time.
Is Andrei Rublev going to reach a Grand Slam semi-final this year?
Oof.
Oh, that's what is he, 0-10? Where is he around that number now? I mean,
yeah.
In the quarters. I mean...
Him and Pegula.
I'm going to say no. And that hurts me to say no because I love Andrei Rublev. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are now in that camp.
Because
I mean,
he's really
absolutely
hot.
Gem of a man.
It's really hard
it's
to
really
do.
Hard. It's, I just... Oh, I think I'm going to have to say no. And I don't like saying no. Well, where are you? Come on. This is a prediction you've got to give me on this one. Yes or no?
No, I don't think he's going to.
Yeah.
I think he might win another Masters event, though.
Yes, 100%. 100%. But it's tough,
it's
isn't it?
As you say, game, I think, I'm afraid.
And look, we haven't spoken about Zverev. And Zverev, when he came back from injuries, he's been working hard. He's there or thereabouts. Tsitsipas, still in love. Still very much in love. And he seems to be settled now with the team, gone back to his dad. That's what works. And is
did you
know,
have Rafa back in your top eight?
No. Because I don't think he'll play enough.
No.
So
he could win Roland Garros.
I think that... I think...
To be fair, that's not enough. You need more points than that. That won't get you in the top eight.
I think he's going to see how this Australia swing goes. I think he's going to get himself onto the clay. I think he's going to build up for another burst at Roland Garros, see if he can get 15. And then it's about the Olympics. I don't think he'll bother with grass or Wimbledon. There's no need. He doesn't need to. You've got nothing to prove. Mm. And I think he'll get himself ready for the Olympics. And whatever happens at the Olympics, I don't see him trucking into the US hard court season. I don't think he needs to, even if this isn't to be his last season on tour. So therefore, I don't think he... there's going to be enough in there to... He could qualify for the eight and then not turn up at the finals. He's done that before because of injury. But I don't see him having a full enough schedule or yeah, no. Did you have him in your eight?
No, I didn't. Yeah, same reason.
I don't think... I think my one rogue with the men's was Arthur Fils, who I've already said I think he is my breakthrough player for this year. Just, you know me, I always tend to go more heart than head. I just love watching him. I just think he can be the hero, he can be the villain. He doesn't mind annoying his opponent or the crowd. He can also get them on side. The way he leaps around, the way that sort of joie de vivre that he has.
The trouble is with these sort of predictions, if you go more head than heart, then you literally just pick the same eight that you've got now. Because it's difficult to fathom, you know, Yvonne Drusova doing what she did. It's difficult to look down the rankings and pick someone who's going to do that. And you sort of feel like on the women's side, somebody will. The chances are out of the four slams, somebody will who's not sort of one of those top five contenders always. But it's not easy to do. And the trouble with the guys is you can see your Arthur Fils or your Ben Shelton or people like that you're going to put in. But who are you taking out? Who's coming out of that top eight? I think I put Fritz in as well. And the reason I put Fritz in is because
not a bad
he has like no points from slams. He finished, I think, the year number 9 or 10. And he got 360 points at US Open. But he basically just hasn't done well in slams. He's got room to put on like another 1,000 points just from making third, fourth round. So I think...
I think I put Hurkacz in. I think... Mine was pretty standard. I think I put Rune quite high up. Medvedev, I think, was second. Djokovic, I think, was first. I think Fils and Hurkacz were my two that maybe a lot of people... I think I took Zverev out. And I think I may have taken Tsitsipas out, thinking. And there's no Rafa in, but there wasn't. So I think... But yeah, I mean, I don't... When it comes to predictions, I think it's fair to say we are both notoriously not great. Is that right? Fair?
Yeah, I mean...
Can I put you
never,
in there?
Never goes...
No, we either go for the really obvious ones or we just get it horribly wrong. I mean, we are the next pod. We will make Australian Open prediction. Well, we have to. We have to.
Yeah.
But I think we'll just. So we've done our Rublev one. He's not going to make. It hurts me to say he's not going to make Grand Slam semi-final this year. Maybe ever. Let's start with this year. But look, I think it's going to be a cracker. It's Olympic year. People's schedules are going to be different. People's goals are going to be different. They're coming back. They've got different. Well, what they want to achieve is different. I mean, Australia's the happy slam. Everyone's happy. Well, for a little bit.
Can anyone do the Monica Puig? Can anyone do it? Get the gold.
Can anyone do it? Can anyone come? Oh, you know, the one, a real heartbreaker for me is Mukova having to pull out of Australia injured. Yeah. Oh, she's, I love watching her play. We know what she can do when she's fit. For a big chunk of her tennis life, she hasn't been fit. And then to say that the wrist is not ready and she can't start, it's just... So that was really sad. But there's been some good news with, as you say, Kvita announcing that she's pregnant, and it's gonna be a bit. We haven't even spoken about Murray. Is 20th. We've only got a couple of minutes, for I've got to head off to football training because after school clubs are back. But Murray, 20th year on the tour.
Yeah, right. It's amazing, and he's playing some good stuff. He played some good stuff at the back end of the season. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracker. So I hope you stay with us. We're going to cover it as much. But I'm going to be out in Australia. We're both working on Australia, so we're going to cover as much as possible. And when the draw's out, we will, depending when I fly and where I am, we will get that pod done when we do predictions. I keep thinking I'm going to try and go really kind of left field. And
it's so hard to do because you just go down the list. You go no.
Not a chance, probably. I would have said Djokovic right here and now, but the wrist, I'm just going to hold off a few days and see. I don't know.
Wait for the draw.
I'm so bad at... I would have said Djokovic if he hadn't had wrist problems wherever he was in the draw, to be fair. But yes, no, okay, I'll wait on that. Yes, after school clubs are back. They haven't gone back to school, but I got football. I haven't. I've got to go to football training this evening. So I think the tree is still outside the door.
I hope it's not as windy as it was training. Yesterday. Wouldn't be fun.
Oh, yesterday. I was getting blown over.
Well, I mean, it was a storm,
I was worried about,
to be fair.
I was worried about putting the tree outside in case it got blown away, but it's still there. Sorry to everyone that we've been away for a bit, but we're back. And we will do... Feel free to send in your predictions, but we will do our predictions next week.
We will.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, Happy New Year, everyone. And speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.